This is Danny and Gallant on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Streaming nationwide on the 710 Sports app and 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
Play the play on the show.
Final hour of power here. Danny and Gallant, Mike Salk filling in for Paul Gallant today. Paul will be back next week. We'll have Michael Bumpus in tomorrow. I was glad you brought up Logan Gilbert with Jerry DePoto, because I felt the exact same way. I thought Gilbert was going to hit the ground running. And you see that with pitchers, that sometimes right out of the gate, a high-profile pitcher, especially someone who throws hard, is really great, and then the league kind of adjusts. We've seen the opposite with Gilbert, which I actually think long-term might be an even more positive sign for his long-term role and what the ceiling might be in baseball.
You know, when we watch players, Danny, it's easy to see who looks good and who doesn't, right? It's easy to see, you know, what the radar gun says or the swing or whatever it is. What we can't see is how smart they are, how they adjust those types of, those questions are not, they're not answerable by us in the media or us as fans. It takes someone like Jerry to say, yeah, one of the reasons that we drafted Gilbert is the intelligence part of the package. Mm-hmm. And when you see that, I mean, some of the best pitchers of all time are that way, not just because of their stuff, but because of their ability to understand the game and use their noggin. And if Logan Gilbert has that, and it sure seems like he does, and Jerry talked about it there, you're right. I think it's almost a better sign that he's not just getting guys out with a funky delivery. He's getting guys out by being a good pitcher.
Yes, and he's developing. One of the other things to watch long-term with him, and that's been a really, really positive sign for the Mariners. The Seahawks are facing a question that, honestly, we all knew was coming. When Seattle traded for Jamal Adams and gave up two first-round picks, a third-rounder, not to mention Bradley McDougal, you knew that it was coming at a price, that's not a rental. This is done with the anticipation of signing him to a long-term deal. Well, he's now halfway through the 2 years that were remaining on his contract when Seattle traded for him. He's in line for an extension. This is front and center. And the question isn't, is Seattle going to sign him? Because I think they will. The question is, did they goof by not signing him earlier? Is it a bad sign that it's gotten to this point? Because, man, if they didn't sign him, this would be a catastrophe. Yeah. I don't think that's happening, but that might mean that you're leveraged, that you're put into a position where, okay, you've got to cut the check.
Well, they've definitely, I think, lost the leverage in this. I've started writing again for 710sports.com, Danny, which is fun. And so I wrote something on this yesterday, and I quoted the great Hans Gruber, because why wouldn't I? And I think you'll remember the quote. He says it was inevitable and, as it happens, necessary. And he's talking about police action as part of his big plan to steal $500 million in negotiable bearer bonds. But he could have been talking about a Jamal Adams extension, because it is inevitable and it's necessary. It's going to happen. It has to happen, right? If you're John Schneider, you gave away two first-round picks to get this guy. You now have to make it work with him long-term, because a 1 or 2 year rental for that kind of price is a non-starter as an NFL GM. You just can't do it. He backed himself into a corner.
He has, except I think that it's actually Jamal Adams who's in, he's the one who's really up against it, because he has to end up signing the extension.
No, he doesn't. He can take the franchise tag.
Yeah, but man, you play 1 year, you want to play two straight years on year-to-year basis in a league where he just hurt his shoulder. Like, do you want to take that when they're telling you they're going to make you the highest paid safety? This isn't a case of, we're going to give you moderate money. We're gonna pay you more than any other safety in this league makes, and your alternative to that is to playing potentially on a series of 1 year.
Yeah, but
deals.
The flip side, if I'm Jamal Adams, is I say, all right, well, yeah, I have that deal in my back pocket. I can sign it whenever I want. In the meantime, I can skip mini camp. Maybe I'm gonna skip training camp, since NFL players these days don't seem to want to practice ever. So, all right, I'll skip all of that. That's fine, and then I'll sign the deal whenever I want. In the meantime, one of the reasons you traded for me, I'm Jamal Adams now, if you can't tell, one of the reasons you traded for me is not just because of my ability on the field, it's because you needed an emotional leader. In the post-Earl, post-Cam, especially version of your team, you needed someone on defense with my kind of emotional fire. And if you're paying me to be a leader and that's part of my value proposition, you really want to make me mad? You really want to go back and forth over small numbers? No, you want me happy. You want me at minicamp. You want me at training camp. You certainly don't want me playing on a year-to-year kind of contract because I'm part of your leadership. You want me happy and satisfied. So make the deal. Offer me what I need. I'm not just a safety. I do it all. I'm a defensive weapon. Now sign me.
And as the Seahawks, I say, we love you, Jamal. We think you're awesome. And that's why we're offering to pay you more than any other safety. That's why, hey, this isn't, you look at our track record. We're not the Jets. Look at the dudes we signed. Cam Chancellor, Earl Thomas, Richard Sherman, Russell Wilson twice, Bobby Wagner twice. We're not cheapskates. We're not. And we're using the same framework for your contract as we are for all those other dudes who, by the way, like you, we think are Hall of Fame players. You know what it's like to be at a cut-rate organization. Yeah. We're not that. We're being fair. This is the framework we use. And so if you really do like being here, as you say, if you really do like being here, well, this is the way we do business.
But Danny, we're doing those things as both you and me. You as the team, since apparently you're now a team guy, and me as Jamal Adams, since apparently I'm now a player guy. And these are pretty big changes from the norm. But you know, we're doing nice things for each other. I'm not in the media squawking. I'm not talking about how I demand this and demand that. You were very nice in deciding not to fine me and excuse my absence.
We're sending each other smoke signals. Exactly.
Like we're gonna get something done here. It's inevitable, as I said. We're flirting with each other, right? You're touching my arm gently, right? I'm looking into your eyes. We know we're going to end up getting together later. But in the meantime, I want to challenge the system that tells me I'm a safety, because why should I be stuck in the NFL's collusive world getting paid and limited by the amount of money that my so-called position dictates? Why should I have to handle that? I should be worth whatever my value is to you, the team, which obviously is high because you spent a whole lot of draft capital to get me.
You're 100% right, Jamal. And we don't begrudge that at all. In fact, that's why we excused your absence. Like, we get it. I'd flex, too. I'd try and get what I want. You get this opportunity. Maybe this is probably going to be the biggest contract in your career. Like, we hope it's not. We both hope that it'll turn out. But it's probably going to be the biggest contract of your career. And if you want to test and see exactly what you can get, hey, no hard feelings. We love you. What? But when it comes down to it, we all know that we're going to find a comfortable middle. And it's just a matter of when that deadline gets set. And if you don't show up to training camp, well, that'll be digging in your heels, and then we'll kind of see how it spins out. And if we go through training camp and it doesn't happen, but at some point we know at some point we're going to get together. And that's the part. Mike Florio from Pro Football Talk characterized the Seahawks as having made a mistake. I think he's wrong. Here's what he said.
I don't know when this became an acceptable trend in the NFL. Well, I know when it's not acceptable in my view. Don't ask me. I don't know what the hell I'm talking about. But I know this. If I'm going to give up multiple first-round picks for Laremy Tunsil or for Jalen Ramsey or for Jamal Adams, you I'm trying not to curse here. You bet your ass I'm good. I get that. That's acceptable. You bet your ass I'm getting him signed to a new contract on the way through the door. What the hell are these people thinking? What was Bill O'Brien thinking? What was Les Snead and Sean McVay thinking? What were John Schneider and Pete Carroll thinking? You're going to do this trade and not get him signed. You give him all the power, all the leverage.
You don't give him all the leverage. Mm. He doesn't have all the leverage.
Got a lot of
it. He doesn't have most of the leverage. No, because ultimately all of those guys signed. All of those guys signed. You know why? Because that's when it gets done. You didn't sign him when you acquired him because there was no deadline to it. He was sitting there saying, I'm an elite player. And you have a choice of, okay, do I want to rein it in now? Or we'll just say we'll do this in a year. We'll do it in a year. The deadline's coming up now, though.
Yeah, and again, like, if you're going to do it, do it. Like, the Seahawks want him out there. I don't know. I don't mean to, like, change the subject, but can you understand why the Players Association has allowed this system to go on in football? I used to argue about it with Clayton all the time, and he's like, wow, he's just going to get safety money. And I was like, well, but why? Well, safeties are only worth this. Why? Why are safeties not important? Don't they come up with, you know, turnovers? Aren't they? It wasn't Cam Chancellor and Earl Thomas. Aren't almost every big time defense we can think of over the last 20 years led by really good safeties in the middle? But no, they're not worth much. Like, why? That just never has made sense to me.
The difference, the player's value is not how good they are. It's the difference between the job you can do and the next best guy I can get to.
But you don't think that's been true of the great safeties? Like, I mean, when you go through all the big time defenses that have won Super Bowls, I mean, the Ed Reeds and the Polamalus and the Lawyer Malloys and the Bob Sanders, like almost every great defense has had a great safety in the middle of it. But yet they're not worth anything.
It's not that they're not worth anything. They're not worth as much as bigger players. And it has to do with longevity, and it has to do with the proliferation and the sheer number of guys at that size.
You
don't find linebackers that are capable of doing that. You don't find defensive ends that there is a bigger gap between that guy and the next guy you can get. And you mentioned injuries play a big part of that. It is Danny and Gallant. We're going to have Pete Carroll coming up at 9:30. We know how much he values safeties. We go around the NFL. That's coming up next.
You're listening to Danny and Gallant on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
Oh, we got a good text here from the 360. I totally agree with this. Mac and Jack's text line. JP's stolen base last night is why I don't like replay. 100% cosign. Did you see that? He slides in. His foot and hand were, he was off the base for maybe not even a full second.
Mm-hmm.
And because the Joker had the tag on,
yep.
I hate that application. It's not how replay's intended to be used. It's awful.
Totally, totally agree with you. And I'm not anti-replay. I think it's, for the most part, fixed sports in a lot of ways. But I think that is a bad rule. And if you're going to, once you've eliminated the neighborhood play and all that, like, I don't know. A bunch of those things sort of tick me off. Baseball's meant to have some blurry lines.
Yeah.
And it's kind of a bummer when that goes away.
Look, the point is whether he gets to the bag before the tag or not. It's not whether he maintains constant spacing with the bag as he's sliding in. It's meant, use it if the tag beats him to the bag, he's out. If you hold the tag on the dude to make sure that that's not something you should use replay for.
And let's go even another step into it is, don't we want stolen bases in the game? Isn't it one of the more exciting plays in the game? Why are you enforcing a rule that makes stolen bases harder? This is the stuff Theo Epstein's working on, quite frankly, with the league. You know, they've talked about bases that are a little bit bigger to help increase the stolen base. Like, there are some ideas to try to fix it, but this is one of those where you're just like, they're getting it wrong. Thankfully, it's not the worst rule in baseball these days, which by far is the runner on second base in extra innings.
Yeah, it's an abomination.
It's the dumbest rule in sports. There is not a dumber rule in all of sports, Danny.
Yeah. Look, me and you are going to get so hung up on these things. We got to get around the NFL. Let's get going.
It's time to go around the NFL. The bottom line on the biggest stories in the NFL every morning at 9:15 with Danny and Gallant.
Today's an exceptional day.
All right, Maura, we got to go fast. Hurry up, offense. We got Pete Carroll coming up in 10 minutes. What do you got?
Okay, first up, Jaguars passing game coordinator. You may recognize the name, Brian Schottenheimer. Was asked a question about Gardner Minshew's role as the number two quarterback in Jacksonville. And I mean, come on. He said, well, again, I don't agree 100%. We certainly haven't named a starter.
You've named a starter. You named a starter when you drafted Trevor Lawrence, number one. Nobody believes that Gardner Minshew is going to start.
Well, I mean, there are guys that have
sat for a little while, right? No.
Not for Gardner Minshew.
No one believes that Trevor Lawrence isn't your week one starter.
Who, the kid in San Diego, the Oregon kid who's in San Diego.
Justin Herbert.
Hair Bear?
Who, he didn't start right off the bat. It was
they
for
had
like
Tyrod Taylor, though.
But Tyrod Taylor is not any great shakes either, especially now.
Tyrod Taylor just has terrible choices.
He really does. Poor guy.
He picks the worst jobs
everywhere he goes. But I mean, at some point, like Tyrod Taylor's not a starter in this league.
He's not Gardner Minshew. Gardner Minshew's not starting week one in Jacksonville.
Well, I didn't say was. I'm just saying I understand why they're keeping the competition open right now. Plus, Tim Tebow's there, right? Isn't he part of the competition, too?
He's playing tight end,
probably.
Which totally makes sense.
Sorry.
All right. Andy Reid has chimed in on the comments that Le'Veon Bell made that he would never play for Reid again. He'd rather retire. Andy Reid said, quote, I enjoyed my time with him. I'm pulling for him. That's how I roll.
You know what he should have said? I can guarantee you Le'Veon Bell is never going to face that challenge again. I can promise you one thing is that Le'Veon Bell will never be forced to play for me again. It's a really hard deal. It's got to be awful. I'm just going to take that off his plate. He doesn't have to worry about that.
Is Le'Veon Bell, does he have anything left?
No.
He's just toast.
And it's sad. Yeah.
It's so sad the way that happens with running backs.
He was such a fun back to watch.
He was.
Too.
And there's so many guys like that. I understand the running backs are a relevant crowd, and I get all of it, how they've changed in the modern NFL. It's too bad. Running backs are my favorite position. whether they're important or not, I recognize like the smart guy look at the NFL, but running backs are my favorite part of the game.
I love watching Derrick Henry.
Yes. Yeah. Like I love Derrick. Marshawn Lynch when he was like all the, there's so many over the course of my life that I just love. It's such a bummer the way A, they're not valued anymore, and B, the way they just disappear one day.
Nerds are right. And that makes it tougher because nerds being right means the games become less fun.
That's right. In all sports.
Yes.
I mean, baseball is obviously the biggest offender of it. Basketball has been hit by it. Football, too. It's too bad that nerds are so smart because, unfortunately, they're ruining the game.
If you see a shot chart of made shots in the NBA for all teams, like where they just put a little red dot on all the made shots, everybody's making shots in the same spots. It's in the corners.
Boring.
It's on the three-point line, kind of the wings, and then it's around the hoop. Everybody's making the same shots. Everybody's taking the same shots because that's what makes the most sense. Nerds have ruined everything.
All right, one more quick one. I know we have to get to break. I don't know if you guys believe in the Madden curse, but after teasing their new cover with a picture of two goats earlier this week, EA has revealed that their Madden 22 cover is Patrick Mahomes and Tom Brady.
Pick one. Pick one. Can't put them both on there. You got to pick one.
You know, I've never played Madden in my entire life.
Really?
Not for 1 second.
How about NCAA football? Have you never played any of those EA Sports football games?
Never.
Oh, I love them. I do. Madden's, I don't like Madden anymore, but there are different points. I've enjoyed those games a lot, but this is, the cover thing has become lame. It reached a tipping point when they put Peyton Hillis on the cover. When they put Peyton Hillis
pachyderm?
On the cover, it's never been the same.
The pachyderm? Yeah. Come on now.
Peyton Hillis, the guy who missed a game because of strep throat. it was never the same after that. That is around the NFL. We got Pete Carroll. He's joining us at 9:30. Mike Salk in for Paul Gallant, the coach, next.
You're listening to Danny and Gallant on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
Start your day with the Professor's Morning Drive.
It is Danny and Gallant. Mike Salk filling in today for Paul, who will be back next week. We're going to have the coach, Pete Carroll, is going to join us here coming up in just a couple of minutes. Their last day of mandatory minicamp. Big picture. How are you feeling going into this Seahawks season, Mike?
Well, first of all, I'm just pumped. I mean, like, this time of year, it's funny. When the weather starts getting nice, you start thinking about, it's like the thing about our business, right, is that once you hit July, you start thinking about August and getting out to training camp, and mini camp's a pretty good, like, little appetizer getting ready for it all. I think I'm excited. I'm excited to see what, you know, what Russ looks like coming off of the off-season drama, right? He honestly, he looks like he's in better shape than he generally is in the off-season. I know you always give me grief for the Russ body stuff, but it looks like he didn't gain his regular offseason weight this year, so I'm, you know, which is important, I think, as he gets older and the importance of the running attack that he brings to the equation. So, I don't know, I'm excited to see what it looks like, and I'm excited to see if this defensive line can be more effective than it was last year with Kerry Hyder, bringing back Carlos Dunlap. Like, you've got some reasons for, you know, is Daryl Taylor going to be that guy who kind of kicks it to the next level? You got some reasons to be excited about what they're capable of.
You do. I think there's also some reasons to be nervous, not about, oh, is this going to be a good or a bad season? What's on the line? I think there's a lot at stake this year. I think there is a ton at stake regarding the long-term future between the team and quarterback. And I know that everything's been wallpapered over. Like, Pete's come out and talked about it. Russ has talked about it. Everybody, they've posed. Russ has interrupted Pete's press conference to assure everybody they're still friends, and John Schneider's photobombed. Like, all that's happened. But I think there's some deeper uncertainty here about what the overall direction. We've seen that this team is good. We haven't seen them be great again since 2014. Yeah. And the clock is ticking on that. And if they're not great this year, there's a big part. I think there's a lot on the line for the overall outcome of them being better and becoming a great team again.
Yeah, right. I mean, we've seen spurts of greatness, but not overall, right? Not consistent greatness like, you're right, we saw with sort of the LOB teams. But, you know, I kind of keep pointing back to what they do up front on defense as the longer we've gone away from those years, the more I've missed not specifically the guys on the back end of that defense, but what the guys on the front did. What Michael Bennett, Cliff Averill, Chris Clemens, right? Like all those guys, I think, were so instrumental to the success of that defense. And I'm looking at what you've done this year, and I can write you a pretty good story that this is the best overall defensive line edge rushing group that they've had since then.
I get that, and I don't think you're wrong. I find myself more fixated on the offense in this way. I think their defense should be average. And I don't think they should have to be better than average for this team to be back in that conversation.
But Pete wants them to be better than average. Right? At his core, Pete Carroll's still a defensive coach.
Yes.
Right? Like, his
job is to fix it. But that's the thing. That system has to change. Like that part of it, you have too much of your talent and too much money invested on your offense. Can Russ and the offense be the signature strength of a great team? Because if the answer to that is no, I think all of the other stuff doesn't matter as much. And I think that's what's on the line. Can you, and whether it's a matter of resource, this is Russ's third offensive coordinator. They've changed offensive coordinators for the second time here in a relatively sort of the point when Russ has become the focal point, the fixture of the offense. And they were great for half a season last year. And then they fell off a cliff. And all of those reasons, I don't know enough to say this is 70% quarterback, 25% protection. The offense became less impactful. It was no longer that sort of cutting edge strength that it was. And to me, that's the biggest question: is can they get back to that point? And a little bit of that is, will Pete let them be? Will Pete let them?
Well, I think what Pete would tell you, and we're going to talk to him here in a few minutes, but well, why did that happen in the second half of the year? Teams figured out that they weren't running the ball very well. They dropped back into cover two, and they weren't ready for that.
Yes.
I mean, like, Pete, I know people want Pete to change. It's not going to change. Pete wants a balanced attack that has a strong running game. That is his belief is the best way for an offense to function. And I get what you're saying about the need for the offense to be great, but I don't know that I agree with you, Danny. Like, you say they've invested a lot offensively. Obviously, they have. But Bobby Wagner, and we both agree they're going to sign Jamal Adams to a big deal, right? Your top draft picks the last few years have all been up front defensively. Your offseason. Like, I think that Pete is pretty committed to a defense that is still supposed to be the hallmark of how his team wins. And I think if the group led by, this defensive group led with Kerry Hyder and Dunlap and the rest of that group, that I think is his key to them being successful.
If they're building this team for the defense to be better than the offense, if that's kind of their blueprint of like, hey, we're going to win it in the way that they won the first Super Bowl with the defense being so dominant and the offense being able to make timely plays.
Well, maybe it's not that.
They're doing this wrong.
Well, I agree. It's not going to be that. I'm not suggesting that this is supposed to be, that's one of the all-time great. It's arguably the greatest defense in the history of the NFL. It's certainly in the top five. I'm not arguing that that's what they have this year. But the last few years, until about, game 9 or 10 last year, they weren't even a good defense. I mean, they were an outright bad defense. They were the worst passing defense in history last year for half of the year.
Have to be better than that.
That's right.
That is backbreakingly bad. But I guess I would go back to that. If this defense is how it was the second half, that should be good enough.
And I think they should be that good or better, because what I just want them to do is be as good as they were in the second half and come up with turnovers. I mean, so much of our off-season conversations each year, I think, always go back to how they lost the final game. Mm-hmm. And in two different years, the Dallas loss in the playoffs and then last year's loss to the Rams, I think that there's been way too much emphasis put on offensive struggles and not enough put on the defense. In the Dallas game, it was Dak Prescott running past Frank Clark and Bobby Wagner and KJ Wright to score an easy touchdown on 3rd and 15. That's why you lost the game, not because they weren't able to throw the ball well. Sorry.
And that's so interesting, because I look at it, I get what you're saying, and last year's, and hey, look, you let Jared Goff with a broken finger, who wasn't even good enough. They didn't even want him to start that game. He ends up but I look at that and say that, hey, you were asking your defense to pitch the kind of quality start that it's just not capable of.
No, you're playing against Jared Goff, who wasn't even supposed to be here today, and then you didn't come up with a single turnover in the whole game. In the meantime, you throw a fluky pick six, and I honestly believe, and you may disagree with me, but I honestly believe, and I'm not blaming the kid, but if DJ Reed doesn't fumble the ball in the punt return, they win the game. I believe they win the game. It doesn't matter what Russ does for the first three quarters. Give him a shot at the end, and he will find a way to will his team to victory. That's why you pay Russ. That's the thing that makes him great. And they had the momentum right at that moment, and the second DJ Reed fumbles it away, poof, there it goes. That's why they lost the game, because they lost the turnover battle 2-0. Not because Russell Wilson and the offense wasn't able to generate anything. They would have done what they needed to do late.
They lost the game because Russell Wilson and the offense weren't able to generate anything. They were trying. They missed getting out of jail free. When DJ Reed fumbled it, their opportunity to sort of pull it out of their hind parts.
But that's
and
what they do.
A
you say that like it's fluky. That's what they do. They pull it out of the hind parts all the time.
And they need to stop doing that as much. And hopefully that's part of the reason that they got a different offensive coordinator is that so they can build a more consistent offense. You got one of the best quarterbacks in the league. You don't need to play that way. You don't have to. And honestly, you shouldn't play that way. It should not come down to, well, we better get that possession in the fourth quarter with the chance to tie or take the lead because then we'll be able to do it because that's what Russell does.
But that's what he does. That's the thing that he does best. Why, like... I honestly
it doesn't
believe
have
they,
to be that hard, Salk. It doesn't have to be that hard.
Sure does. That's the way the NFL is. You make it seem like other teams just blow everybody out. Tell me about the sexy offense that won the Super Bowl this year. Oh, wait, no. It was the defense that completely dominated all the way to a Super Bowl this year. Like, I just don't believe in that stuff.
You're not going to have that defense no matter how much. And if you are going to wait around to build that defense, you might as well get a cheaper quarterback to do it. My deeper fear... isn't because as much as we talk about the struggles or this team kind of being good but not getting to be great, which is they've improved their regular season win total for three successive years. They've gone from 9 to 10 to 11 to 12. And I know nobody wants to say, hey, that's progress. The standard is higher than that. But they've shown progress. Here, my fear is that there is so much baggage right now and there's so much baggage in the weight between quarterback and franchise that anything short of a Super Bowl is going to result in the kind of offseason that we're seeing right now in Green Bay.
Yeah.
Green Bay's won 13 games in two consecutive years, and their quarterback is furious with them. And it's for different reasons. Wow. It has to do with them drafting his replacement. I'm worried that there's that kind of tension beneath the surface for as much as we're being told that, hey, everything is okay, that tension is lurking below the surface.
That's a fair concern. I think that it's hard to compare it to Green Bay. I mean, look, my take on the Green Bay thing, unfortunately for him, Aaron Rodgers quit on his own team in the San Francisco NFC Championship game a few years ago when he decided to pull a Cam Newton and not go after a fumble. Like, okay, you quit. In the first half of a game, you walked out on your team. And then you're mad that they drafted your replacement? You quit. Of course they drafted your replacement. As far as they were concerned, the last image they had of you was of you deciding you weren't interested in playing in the game anymore. So then you're mad they draft your replacement? Sorry, Aaron, but buck up, Buttercup. Like, you quit. There are consequences to your actions. That is an unsalvageable situation because of it. Well, I don't think the Seahawks
I'll tell you
that.
What. I agree with you. Also, the Packers and their front office have taken no notes from the Seahawks on how you handle a grumpy quarterback.
Right.
How you handle a grumpy quarterback is you don't talk about your grumpy quarterback. You don't give him anything else to be grumpy about. And you certainly do not go in front of a meeting and call your quarterback a complicated fella. Like, you certainly don't. If there's anything that you learn from Pete Carroll that they do exceptionally well, which is when someone's upset, they don't engage. They don't give him someone else. They don't... You're picking a fight and you're looking to pick a fight. You know what? We're not going to say anything. Mm-hmm. We're not going to say anything because we don't want to wrestle with you. That's going to make us all look bad.
Well, that is true. I mean, they are. Pete is the master at this, right? And you know, you see it when guys leave. I mean, they kind of get their frustration out and then they look around and they're like, actually, you know, it wasn't so bad. It's kind of nice over there, right? I mean, the fact that Richard Sherman, of all people, was considering maybe even coming back to Seattle this offseason should tell you all you need to know, because that ended as complicated as it could possibly be. That Marshawn Lynch ended up coming back here. I mean, like, you're right. Pete does a masterful job of just not engaging with those people that are upset. And if that was Russ this offseason, they let him sit out there. Like, okay, be mad. I don't care. All right, you're mad. You're the one who's going to have to talk to Dwayne Brown when you come back in and explain why you don't think his offensive line is good. Good luck with that. Like, we're not getting ourselves in the middle of it. So you're right. There's a lot of tension under the surface, and how they play and how the offense works will probably dictate whether or not they're successful this year. But don't you think having a defense that's significantly better than the first half of last year and maybe incrementally better than the second half of last year can mask so many of those problems?
It should keep it should keep, and having a better defense, which they should, it should keep them from relying so much on Russell.
Yeah.
And that was a problem in their, as good as Russell played as well as a quarterback could play for the first eight games of the season.
Mm-hmm.
He did. And was it sustainable? It certainly wasn't last year. And when some of the defensive adjustments came, and I don't think this is all on Russ, he did not play his best football that second half of the season. I feel that there's a lot of different things that are stacked up against Seattle right now. You've got a safety and a left tackle who would like new deals. I don't think that that's some sort of backbreaking impediment, but those are issues that are there. You've also got a quarterback who's on, and you're going to be switching offensive coordinators. There are going to be some changes and some challenges that are going to be here early on. I care more about how they finish than how they start. And this is, Pete's had a lot of experience dealing with a little bit of dysfunction, and this is, he's going to have some more. He's going to have to manage
but
that.
That's what Pete gets paid for. I mean, that is the thing about him that he is arguably best at, right? Is dealing with challenging players, right? He's good at it. He really is. For a long time. Now, eventually, sometimes they'll get the best of him because challenging players are challenging for a reason. And you get the Earl Thomas at the end of his. But think about how long Pete was able to keep those guys in line. I mean, I think Pete's masterful at a lot of this stuff. I think he does a
totally agree.
Really,
it's 100% agree.
And especially considering it was supposed to be his weakness coming in. It's like the J.P. Crawford thing we were talking about earlier. Guy wasn't supposed to be able to play defense. He's a Gold Glover. Pete wasn't supposed to be able to deal with troublesome adults. And it turns out he's better at it than nearly every coach in the NFL. That's a remarkable turnaround. But having, not quite, I don't know if they're at odds, but having tension with the most important person in your franchise, your quarterback, that is a new challenge, I think, for Pete. And I'm curious to see how that plays its way out. But I think a lot of the talent that they've brought in should mask a lot of it.
And look, Russell is not, we've got regular season Russ back, off-season Russ is out of, so that should be easier. I do get the sense that this is kind of a make or break year, not in terms of the coach, but in terms, I think there's a lot riding on the outcome of the season when it comes to the future of the quarterback. Am I making too much of that?
Well, he didn't request a trade, so, I mean, you know, that was all just a media thing.
You're right. He didn't request it, but his agent did give a list of four teams, and even Pete said that didn't have to happen.
He didn't request a trade. It's fine, Danny. It's all fine. There's nothing riding on it. He didn't request a trade.
Is this a make or break year? Because
yes.
There's part of me that feels like, yeah, it is a make or break year.
Yeah, for their relationship, for sure. For sure it is. You know, Daniel Jeremiah was on the podcast with me and Brock. He kind of said that, hey, look, Russell feels like a rental right now. And
he
so
said
you're kind
it's
of,
a short-term marriage.
Yeah, you're kind of all in and trying to go for it while you can. There's no doubt there's an element of that, which is why you've got to sign Jamal Adams, right? Which is why you've got to sign Dwayne Brown. Everything is sort of being put. And you know what? Unfortunately, they've wasted a couple of years. Now you're sort of at a point where Russ is holding the gun to your head and saying, all right, you better do this, right? Or I have enough leverage to walk away.
Has it ever felt like this before? I don't think it has during Pete Carroll's time here. There's certainly been the weight of expectations, and there's certainly been dysfunction. I don't think it's ever felt like, okay, things, you could go one way or the other here when it comes to, they've never had to sort of pull the plug or make a call on a player as important as Russ, who's still got good and should have good football left.
No, that's true. You did have the year, I don't remember what season it was, but it was a few years ago where the national media started talking about whether or not Pete was on the hot seat. Do you remember that?
Oh, yeah.
And everyone locally, like I remember we kept talking to people and they'd be like, oh, Pete's on the hot seat. You're like, no, he's not.
Are you crazy?
What are you talking about?
You're
like,
nuts?
Oh, well, I mean, you guys aren't looking. Like, Pete's not on the hot seat, you fools. Like, Pete's just fine. They love him. They think he's doing a great job. And he is. Like, I remember just being completely baffled by the entire national storyline that there was some sort of a hot seat alert for Pete Carroll. Made no sense. They signed a huge extension like a few days later. So, yeah, I think that here in Seattle, this one feels differently. I would bet that nationally they don't have that perspective of this.
They do about Russ's future, though, right? And that would be one where I actually think that the national media does sort of see and characterize this correctly. And I know a lot of people in Seattle are resentful of that and of all the different conversation about the media. I don't think that part is overblown. I don't think it's overblown, the sort of the underlying tension that exists here.
There is some. There's no doubt, Danny. I'm like, I'm with you. There's some underlying tension. Leadership has changed, right? I mean, you know, you have Bobby Wagner who is a different type of leader than what they had during their hallmark, you know, their heyday years. And I guess that's why the Jamal Adams thing, I know we've sort of been talking through it the whole day. It's why it continues to me to seem very obvious that you've got to get it done. Pete relies on and thrives on that level of sort of chaotic emotion, right? And Bobby, as great as he is, that's not his thing. He's very much in control. Same with KJ. They're pretty level-headed guys. I think he needs some of the sort of, and I'll say this kind of fondly, hot-headedness of a Jamal Adams. And so, I don't know. I guess I look at it and think that they're getting closer to being the kind of team that he wants them to be, even while the local media and fans are demanding that Pete change his tune on who he wants to be. Pete's just not going to do that.
Are they better off when there's turmoil? That's the other part of this. For all of the time, and there's, hey, having this uncertainty, that didn't keep them from winning early on.
No.
There are a lot of different things going on, whether it was Marshawn not showing up to training camp because he wanted a new deal and Seattle not giving it to him. Even they ended up coming back from Cam Chancellor's absence and making it back to the playoffs and
came close to
making a run then. I don't think it keeps up. I think this team's personality is different, though. I think that Legion of Boom team and that defense was better when there was turmoil. I'm not sure that that's true with Russ. I'm not sure. Now that Russ is the signature part of this team and is the emphasis, and maybe it's the difference between offense and defense, I don't think this team handles turmoil or thrives in turmoil in the same way that that team did.
Well, you're right in the personalities being different, right? That it's just a group of people that don't necessarily, you know, they don't thrive on it, and so maybe it's just not built the same way.
Sherman needed it.
Mm-hmm. And
Sherman, yeah, he did. And he, that was one of the things that you talked to him. He went out of his way to generate it sometimes. Like, it wasn't an accident that he picked a fight with Harbaugh and was willing to say all of those things, or the fight with Revis. Like, he actually felt that talking that way, and we do have the Seahawks coach with us. Pete Carroll is with us now. Pete, I guess it's going to be wrapping up an off season today. How do you feel things have gone this week with your work with your team?
Who are you working with today, by the way?
Excuse me. Mike Salk.
Hey,
Mike
Coach.
Salk is present. Are you familiar with him?
Mike who?
Aww.
Salk.
Awesome. How about that, Mike?
Coach, I miss talking to you. It's nice to be with you. I feel like Marshawn coming out of retirement after I hung up the spikes a few years ago.
Well, yeah, if you did that, you wouldn't be saying much, though. But good to hear you. Nice to talk to you, too, Danny. Let's see, you asked me about our camp. Yeah, everything, really, we culminate today with the specialist won the doubles tourney shoot-off. So that was a big deal today. They knocked down the linebackers and the tight end, so it was a good win for the specialist in the shoot-off. Camp has gone great. Our guys did a fantastic job again. I'm so impressed with the work we've done on Zoom in preparation. We've had two great weeks. The guys reported in fantastic shape. There wasn't anybody we needed to hold out for anything for the physical side of it in terms of conditioning. So the guys really pressed it, which is a good indication of what we can count on going into the big camp. They'll come back around. Of course, we're all over it. We have 6 weeks to get ready. But we've had just a lot of really crisp work, a really impressive beginning for Shane with his guys on the offensive side. Russ and Shane have really been on it, and that they have to lead the charge, and they've been very connected and very, so it's been a really tight execution for those guys. Defense has done really well. It's been fun to see the young guys. What's different about this camp than other camps is because of the way it was formatted, the rookies got a lot of work, and so our rookies are by far the furthest along they've ever been at this time of year. So they just by the volume of work that they got done, so that's going to really help us in camp and in the preseason. So we're off to a great start and feeling good about it.
Coach, for an average fan like me, how will Shane Waldron's offense look different to my eye?
I think what you may see is just the tempo of us, you know, the way we work. He is, because we're still his own team. You know, we've been his own running team primarily for the whole time we've been here, back to the Trojan days. And it's something that we really, really love. And we love all of the passing game off of that, which they had extensive in-depth work in the keeper game and all of the play passes. We'll see, you know, some more of that. And then I just think that the details that he brings and the continuity of the entire system is really sharp, And the fact that Russell is in on it and Geno, they can execute it and call the stuff at the line of scrimmage and all the things we have to do, I just think you'll see us play faster. I'm hoping that we'll really protect the quarterback better. That's one of the things that we're trying to do with our rhythm of things. As we, when we're at our best, Russell's really quick with the football, and so that's been a big focus for us.
You talked about protection there and being better at protecting. What goes into that? Because that's a really complicated, it's everything from how quickly the quarterback gets rid of the ball to how well the offensive linemen communicate. You should have some more continuity. What are the reasons that you think that the protection might improve this year?
Well, it really, Danny, to me, it is about it's about getting the ball out. And so that means the execution and what you're asking the quarterback to do in terms of the style of throws. For timing purposes, you know, I would like us to be really quick in obvious passing situations and really rhythmical and which we always want to be, but I think we're the furthest along we've been at this point. Yeah, we do have, and you do need great continuity up front. We do have some competition up front, but we're really excited about the depth of the group and the leadership of the group, whether it's Ethan Posick or Kyle Fuller up there calling the shots at center. Both those guys are battling for that spot, and they both are really handling things well. And so that's a big part of it. It's more than that, though, too, Danny. It's also, you know, the backs that participate in protection as well as the tight ends and the specialty things that they do. All of that it's very intricate. And so the best thing you can do to help it is get the ball out. And so Russ is really tuned in to doing that, and hopefully we can be really sharp right from the get-go.
Coach, how important is Jamal Adams to your defense?
Oh, he's a big factor. He's such a playmaker. Kenny's done such a good job of tying him into the defense right from the moment he got here. As a coverage guy near the line of scrimmage, he's really good. As a run defender, he's really good. And as a pressure guy, he's the best in the history of the game. So he has a really wide range of stuff that he brings. Plus, and you know, the thing that I hope our fans will see, you know, when they get to see him this year, they'll see his energy that he brings to and adds to the defense. He's very, very high spirited and very tough, and just adds a ton in that regard.
We're talking to Pete Carroll, Seahawks coach. You should be very familiar with the voice. We're grateful for him taking the time. We've got a couple more questions for him. Pete, I tend to be a worrier. At times, this can drive people around me insane. Yeah, I got some neurotic tendencies. I know we've talked about Jamal Adams and his hope for a new contract, and I know that that's something that you guys want to get hammered out too. There have also been a report earlier this week about Dwayne Brown and perhaps his desire for a new deal. Should I be worried about these things? Should I be sweating them out?
I don't know if I can help you on that, but you shouldn't be sweating it out. We're communicating really well with all of our guys. We have a number of guys that are, you know, come up on their last year of their contract, and that's always in consideration and discussion. So that's an ongoing process. John has always dealt with that. Jamal's situation, you know, when we made the big trade for him, we had planned for this negotiation to happen, to lock him up for a long time. He's a young man, young player with a huge future ahead of him. And so this was always in the works. So that's the thing we're focusing on now. And all of that is going well, and I'm not going to go any deeper than that, but it's going well, and we're communicating at a good clip. So I really anticipate that should get worked out, and we love what he's brought to our team in the shorter, just 1 year, and looking forward to a long future with him.
Who's your breakout player this year?
Oh, I think you're going to be really excited to see Gerald Everett. Gerald Everett is a guy who comes to us from the Rams out of free agency that was acquired by the Rams when Shane was there. Shane was responsible for him, coaching him up. This is the fanciest, sweetest looking receiver tight end mix that we've had. He's like a wide receiver. He's got terrific after the catch run ability, really aggressive, and he's a good blocker too. And he knows the system inside and out. So what Gerald brings us is a real threat in the throwing game. Should be a big factor on third downs. And our tight end spot is a good position already. With Will, and you're going to see Colby Parkinson coming up. He's been really impressive. But Gerald is a really unique player, and he should catch a lot of balls and be right in the middle of the action this year.
Pete, last year was so unusual, challenging, any different. It seems like adjectives are incapable of describing all of the things that went on last year just in the world and with the difficulties you guys faced in putting together a season. I know we're not done with all of the challenges of the pandemic, but we are coming out of it. And you guys having some off-season work like this week, players on the field, the expectation we're going to see fans in the stands. How do you feel as you head into this off-season? You'll be coming back for training camp. How do you feel about your team right now compared to the situation we were all facing a year ago?
We're in a different situation, but yeah, much the same in terms that we need to keep people safe and be really attentive to it. You know, we put forth a tremendous effort last year in terms of attitude and really philosophical approach to protect our guys, and our players just took to it. And they, you know, we did a marvelous job throughout the season and all of caring for one another. And that's really where this came from. You know, this whole thing is dealt with when you care the most about the people around you, and then you make the efforts and your conscience is in the right place to make the right decisions to stay safe. And I was thrilled about the challenge of it coming through like it did. Our guys just did a fantastic job. So we have carryover from that. You know, we gained a lot, and it was a disciplining experience that we needed to take under our wings when we did. And so our guys come back, and they really, one of the reasons that the guys, you know, were hesitant to come back is that we didn't have the guidelines early on of what was going to happen in terms of, you know, re-entering the program and how we would maintain it. And they were very strict about that. Every guy that's come through here on the return of this offseason has tested negative on an everyday basis, and that's dedication to the principles of, you know, taking care of your the people around you and yourself. And so there's going to be some vaccination issues that are different this year that we didn't have that last time around, and we're dealing with that. Our guys are going at a pretty good clip so far. We hope to have close to everybody vaccinated by the time we come back to camp, and then we'll take care of business. But we learned a lot, and it was extremely challenging. But I was really proud of our guys, and I think we learned a lot about our guys, you know, how much they care about this program.
Well, it would be nice. I think we're all looking forward to having some fans back in the stands, too.
Let's get those 12 back. No kidding. Yeah,
that's gonna
be sweet. We can't wait to see that happen.
Pete, we really appreciate the time. We always enjoy how much you're willing to share, and it's exciting to talk to you as you guys wrap up your offseason, and we'll look forward to seeing you back in at the end of July for training camp.
All right, final day of Hawk Camp 2021 today. We're going to have a blast and get out there and do a little competing today. See ya.
Here you go.
That is Coach Pete Carroll. That is going to do it for us. Our flags usually raise courtesy of Carter Volkswagen. We want to give a shout-out to them. Appreciate Pete Carroll joining us, Jerry DePoto. Mike, it was wonderful to work with you today. I really appreciate you joining us.
Thanks for having me in, bud. It was fun.
Thank you to Maura back in the studio, making all of these different moving parts work. It is 710 ESPN Seattle, Cairo AM Seattle.